Oh, hey there, Ghostbuster fans. Welcome to Why We Bust, a weekly show where we look at the Ghostbuster cosplay community across the world and we ask individuals the burning question that's on everybody's mind. Why do you do what you do? This show is powered by Memoriam Development, the Windy City Ghostbusters, and viewers like you. So turn that pack off, shut your trap, and take the night off and enjoy Why We Bust.
And go.
All right. Hello, everyone. The Windy City Ghostbusters. We're excited to present the preeminent show focused on the charitable side of ghostbusting. We're meeting the incredible people from all over the world that dress like khaki-covered exterminators lugging around 30-pound magic backpacks, all in the name of putting smiles on faces and helping people. You know, we'll find out what really makes them tick and see if they can answer the question, why we bust. I am your host, Patrick Calvert, and joining me is the central nervous system to our show, ensuring we're broadcasting loud and clear over Twitch, Facebook, YouTube, as well as all of the major podcast apps like Apple, Spotify, and Stitcher. It's James Norman. James, how are you? Happy New Year.
Oh, hey, how's it going? Doing well?
Good. Yeah, it's going. We're doing better than our friends in Indiana and kind of the central states here in the country. We all got snowed in over the past 24 hours. Just a dusting here in Chicago. But
yeah,
New Year, excited. Excited to get things started. The clock is ticking on my my daughter, who will be arriving at the end of February, and I have not started taking our workout room apart and turning it into a nursery yet. So I picked out the paint. So got to get some stuff up on Facebook Marketplace and start getting on that. My wife just keeps reminding me that it's not a guarantee that she'll be here at the end of February. It could be here anytime. So we got to get going on that. So that's what looms over my head these days. But other than that, we're all doing well. And Steve Zandrowski is with us. Steve is the former president and current charity liaison with the Windy City Ghostbusters. How are you, Steve?
I'm doing great. It's good to be on here this time as a full guest.
Yes, we're not going to rush you off. Or Bob's not going to be in the chat saying, get Steve off.
I mean, he probably will be, but I'm just going to ignore him like I usually do.
As you do.
As, you know, you, again, former president of the Windy City Ghostbusters, that is your right to do that.
It's called executive privilege, and you never lose it.
Well, we appreciate you hopping on, and, you know, just in the 10 minutes before the show started, I realized we're going to have to really work to keep this at a concise hour here for you. But we will do that. We'll have a lot to talk about. I'm sure you'll be back many times. But, you know, as we get the show going, you know, for everyone listening, Steve is going to tell us, kind of give us a recap of the year end for Windy City Ghostbusters and everything that was going on with the toy drive and kind of our final tallies on the year and who we helped and how we helped. And before we get to that, I want to take a dive into this week in Ghostbusters history. And I will say this was not the most eventful week in Ghostbusters history, but there is still some stuff out there. But and I'll throw in a few things. There was a lot that happened in our absence. So between, you know, December 15th and today, there were a lot of movies that came out. But let's see, who do I have here? We can get to them. But while we were gone on our break, it was Finn Wolfhard's birthday on December 23rd. He turned a decrepit 22 years old. Poor Finn, really getting up there in age. But yeah, December 23rd, 2002, Finn Wolfhard was born. And also, let's see here. My notes are a little bit scrambled, so I apologize to everybody. January 11th, 2002, Harold Ramis put out Orange County with Jack Black and Colin Hanks. That's one I haven't seen in a while, but I remember enjoying it. It's a, you know, that kind of early 2000s Jack Black style comedy there. $18 million budget, $43 million at the box office. So wasn't crazy, but it earned its money back and then some. But you know, I don't know if you guys, either of you see Orange County? I think it ran on Comedy Central a lot.
Not in forever.
I have, I can't remember it.
Yeah, that was, I think Colin Hanks is holding his own in that. There's a certain character that he really can nail. I think that one fit the bill. And on January 11th, but in 2011, Ivan Reitman directed the Natalie Portman, Ashton Kutcher blockbuster No Strings Attached. And, you know, movie studio had to be pleased. $25 million budget, $150 million at the box office on that one. So that is a you know, Ivan Reitman did well by the studio on that one. I can say I have not seen No Strings Attached.
Neither have I. But it makes sense that it made that kind of money because they were both really hot back then.
Those are big names now, even bigger, back then. Right at the peak for both of them. And I can promise our audience that the next available time that James, Steve, and myself are all together, we will rent No Strings Attached and watch it and we'll film it and put it on one of
our live shows.
It'll be a Mystery Science Theater 3000 style. We'll make sure to get that up. If we ever do a paid Patreon, we'll do that.
It'll be the first and last thing on the Patreon.
Pretty much.
Yeah, you get your money's worth. Let's see. So there was a lot going on as far as, you know, in the years of will there be a Ghostbusters 3, won't there be a Ghostbusters 3 type rumors in this week in Ghostbusters history. So December 15th, Bill Hader was rumored for the a potential Ghostbusters 3 project. Now, he denied knowing anything about it, but it was leaked that Sony was eyeing Hader, Will Forte, and Anna Faris as potential proton pack wielders in Ghostbusters 3. And if you can believe it, Dan Aykroyd himself confirmed that Hader was one of the strong possibilities to pick up the torch for the Ghostbusters. So I don't remember the Bill Hader, Will Forte, Anna Faris rumors.
It was one of the last ones
that
was put out there before it actually happened. And like 2016 happened.
Yes.
So I just remember every single time it was like, who are the four hot comedians at the time?
Right.
And let's throw it at a wall and see if it sticks.
Yeah. And while I think that would be funny, there is an element of realism that the main cast of Ghostbusters brought to it. That I, you know, there's a little bit too much winking at the camera at times with Will Forte. I think you need to ground a little bit of reality in Ghostbusters in order for it to really maintain the feel of what we love about the original. And that's my take on it. So I would say I'd go and see it. Glad that one wasn't what finally happened. It was worth the wait. Afterlife and the way that where we're at today, it was worth the wait to kind of get everything right there. But you know what happened in history over our break, December 20th, 2011, the National Enquirer had a Ghostbusters headline where Bill Murray finally read the Ghostbusters 3 script. He then shredded it and sent it back to Ivan Reitman and Dan Aykroyd. The Enquirer reporting that Murray disliked the script so much, he decided to shred it, send it back to Dan Aykroyd and Harold Ramis with a note attached saying, "No one wants to pay money to see fat old men chasing ghosts." And that was December 20th, 2011. You never quite know whether to believe, well, the National Enquirer for one, but then Bill Murray stories, you know, I'm sure he loves the fact that three quarters of them never happened, but you can, he's, he does, he can be, he can do those kinds of things. Do you guys think that the paper shredder script is a real story, or is the National Enquirer?
I think that's the most believable National Enquirer story I've ever heard.
Yes, like, I would agree with that.
I could absolutely see him doing that.
Yep. That's funny.
Let's be honest. I mean, how often do you think he probably got a random email from Dan just being like, "Hey buddy, got a new script. Want you to look at it." And then he's just like, "Oh my God, here's another one." Until they finally did it, you know, 30 years later. But
right.
Still.
Yeah, those kind of the stories around those late 90s, early 2000 scripts sounded more like a Men in Black movie at times than Ghostbusters. But, I would still like to read that script.
I would have been happy for Hellbent. I mean, I think that's the one that all of us kind of were fed bits and pieces
in the 90s,
of over
right?
The
That's
year.
Where the Ghostbusters finally, they actually had to cross over.
Yeah.
Into
to Manhattan.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. it was just weird enough. And I was like, okay, I would watch this just cause it feels like it's so off the beaten path, mm-hmm. much kind of like, Frozen Empire. It felt more like a cartoon episode as opposed to, you know, the linear story.
Right. And that I do recall in the 2009 video game, you kind of cross over to another portal or another dimension at some point. I remember that kind of flashing into my brain, wondering how close this was to what we had been hearing for years about the Ghostbusters going to the other side. But I hope it happened just for the sake of a great story. But that was December 20th, 2011, National Enquirer story
here's,
there. And
here's, a, oh, here's just a hypothetical question for you guys.
Okay.
Let's say that movie did happen. The odds then of us ever getting the video game probably goes down to zero.
Correct.
So would you take the film or would you take the video game? If you had a film of the guys, mm-hmm. it's 1999. All of them are still around. All of them are on board and willing to do it. Would you take that over the video game?
Probably.
It's tough to say no to seeing all four of those guys on screen together again. Although the playing that video game and hearing their voices together was some of the most fun I had playing a video game ever. So
that's a tough one.
Since
I
played the video game, if you're asking me today, I'll just go back and watch the movie. I'll take the movie now. But yeah, that's a tough one. I think the video game probably had a better story than what the movie would have been.
I feel like for our fandom as a whole, it's given more depth to the universe, mm-hmm. as opposed to what I feel like at the movie would have. I mean, you've got new equipment, you've got pack upgrades and trap upgrades and all this, you know, all this crazy mm-hmm. stuff from the game. I feel like even if you're looking at Frozen Empire, the difference between 84 and 2024 is minimal. So looking at it that way, I would take the game, mm-hmm. honestly.
Yeah, there's some gaps to be filled probably in terms of the technology and what kind of experimental stuff was around and then sort of disappeared in the decades between Ghostbusters 2 and Frozen Empire there. But, you know, I think you bring up a good point too, as far as just seeing the characters come back. That would have been an awkward time in the lives to see, you know, the four heroes there, where they're a little too old to be really kicking butt like they did in the old days, but not old men, where it's a little bit easier to forgive anything or, you know, how active or not active they are here as men in their 70s in the new movies than if it was, you know, Dan and Harold and Ernie would still be kicking butt, but I think the Dan, Harold, and Bill might have been sucking wind.
I feel like it probably would have ended up being like the Extreme Ghostbusters episode, Back in the Saddle. Mm. I feel like that's probably what we would have gotten, was just, okay, yeah, it's clear, like, it's fun to see them, but it's clear that, yeah, like, they're trying. At that point, they would actually be trying to do all the stuff instead of passing the torch as much. And it would, I don't know. I think you're right. It would be odd to see them at that stage trying to go like they were, and even in 89.
Yeah, it's as much as I wanted it for all those years. Now that we're here, I'm enjoying the path that eventually was set forth there. Interesting. Well, thank you for that question, Steve, and letting us kind of play fantasy book the Ghostbusters franchise.
Always glad to derail the conversation.
Well, we've got a few more things here. There was some stuff I just never heard of. Apparently, you know, December 15th, 2014, it's reported through the Sony. Remember, Sony was hacked by North Korean intelligence and released a bunch of their emails. Those hacks show that Channing Tatum and Chris Pratt had been kind of lobbying together to do a Ghostbusters reboot. This is another one that did not land on my radar. Do you guys recall hearing about that one? Where was I? Everyone but me seemed to be catching this news. Yeah, I was student teaching. That's probably why I didn't pay any attention.
That was right around the same time where it leaked that they wanted to do all the crazy 21 Jump Street films.
Okay.
So I feel like it probably got lost in the shuffle.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. Cause I remember things coming out from those leaks that were more like Chris Pratt wanting to be Indiana Jones, or maybe those weren't the leaks. Maybe those were just other rumors that I'm blended into this. I'm not Mr. Hollywood. So I apologize for that, but that was an interesting one. And I would, you know, I could see Chris Pratt in the Ghostbusters role. Channing Tatum. Maybe. We'll see. They're definitely not college professors.
No. You know, after seeing him in Deadpool, I'd be willing to give him a chance.
I haven't seen the new Deadpool movie, but
spoilers. All right.
I would give Channing Tatum a chance over Chris Pratt. I feel like I'll probably get some heat for this. Chris Pratt plays the same character every single film, and I. Do I want to see that same character in Ghostbusters when I've seen it played out so much?
That's a good point. Yeah. There's better ways to facilitate that character than throwing him into a Ghostbusters movie. But if it was the only way that a Ghostbusters movie is going to get made, you know, we'll take it. But here we are, January 9th, 2015. It was first reported that Melissa McCarthy was cast in the 2016 reboot. And she was very busy at that time. I think Mike and Molly was still on the air, and she was pretty hot with a lot of other film projects out there. So the article that I read was basically talking about how they don't know how she'll fit it into her schedule. But I think
she made it work.
She made it work, and a great addition there to the franchise. December 16th, 2015, Ghostbusters, the 1984 original, was added to the National Film Registry. So that's for films that are at least 10 years old and are considered culturally, historically, or aesthetically significant and to preserve for history. So other films that went in that same year in 2015 included Top Gun and Shawshank Redemption. So
it's good company. Good.
Yeah, good company there, and glad that, you know, if there's a nuclear holocaust ever, the Ghostbusters will be preserved somewhere for future generations or
fitting, really,
species to see. Yeah. And then let's see, January 5th, 2018. This, you know, we can, I'll breeze through these as I'd like to actually talk to you a little bit, Steve, here. But IDW released Everyone Answers the Call. That was kind of a crossover between the original four Ghostbusters and the 2016 cast. And Ivan Reitman made some headlines by commenting on it, saying that he always wanted to meld the two worlds and it's important for the future to bring everybody into a single universe. So that was Ivan's two cents there. And yeah, I don't see how it would work, obviously, with, I don't want to start getting into multiverses with the Ghostbusters world, but it would be
honestly
nice.
I'm surprised it hasn't really actually fully happened yet, because it's such kind of a major trope right now.
It would be a great real Ghostbusters episode.
Yeah. 100%.
And, yeah, I could definitely see that being in that form. And who knows where that cartoon may take us that we've been hearing about now for forever and not getting too many details. But so, yeah, IDW's Everyone Answers the Call. And in the chat, so it sounds like some folks have read that. I am known for not having read the IDW comics yet, but good to know that's there. It's on the list. It's on the long list of things I'll eventually get to. And January 9th, 2024, this was exciting news for all of us, as that was when Sony pushed up the Frozen Empire release by 1 week. So we all got to see the movie even sooner than we wanted to. But yeah, that's it for this week in Ghostbusters history. I said there wasn't a lot going on, but then it took a little while. So so I appreciate you guys joining me for a stroll back in Ghostbusters history. And this brings us to the main event. Steve, we are now in 2025. This was your first full year with the official title of Charity Liaison with the Windy City Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
Kind of give us a recap. How did the year go?
It was amazing. We did such great work. Let me start by saying, you know, as Charity Liaison, you know, my role specifically is to interact with and be kind of the go-between the team and hospitals and charitable groups, other charitable organizations, things like that. I can't do what I do without the cooperation of the event committee. And everybody on the event committee and their chair, Jason, has been so wonderful to work with on this for this past year. We've had, I believe it was 6 hospital visits this past year, which is phenomenal. And we wrapped it up with being able to donate $11,000 to the hospital, you know, and that's all from money. That's a huge number, right?
Yeah.
But that's all from money that didn't come from nowhere. Mm-hmm. That came from all of the individual events combined. And we were able to, you know, from whether it's a parade, whether it's a birthday party, whether it was a corporate appearance, a ball game, whatever it was, all of that combined, we're able to put that together and drop off a really nice check to La Rabita. That being said, we also did a couple events this year for the first time in like 9 years with Lurie's. We did some work and partnered with Extra Life Chicago, and did we raised some money at one of our events that went straight to Extra Life Chicago. And what Extra Life does is they're directly partnered with Lurie's. So again, in my role, I'm kind of the go-between the team and this other group. So as a result of that, we were welcomed into both Lurie's outpatient facility as well as their inpatient facility downtown in order to do a visit there. from a historical perspective, the team made an appearance 9 years ago, and then we lost the contact there, and things happen as it does over time.
Sure.
And so we haven't been there in so long. The cool thing is there were members of the staff there that remembered that visit. I happened to be at that visit. Mm-hmm. And so to talk to them, they were like, man, we remember when you came out the last time. It was so cool. I was like, yeah, I remember it too. I was there. and they were like, you know, we're really excited to have you guys back. And, you know, hopefully we're able to continue to grow that partnership between us and Extra Life Chicago, as well as with Lurie's, to supplement what we're doing on a much larger scale with La Bebida.
Perfect.
Hydrate,
guys.
Oh, let's do a quick hydrate. Got my Coke Zero here.
I drank for Steve since he didn't.
Thank you. I've got to go to training after this. So I cannot be imbibing tonight.
No,
unfortunately.
No worries. But you know, Steve, that is, it's fun to hear you say a couple things. One, before I forget it, how it's hard to put yourself in a position to realize that when we make an appearance somewhere, we're in people's memories for a really long time. that you know, just showing up and doing the gig, it can sometimes feel routine. But I know, you know, you don't get to see a Ghostbuster every day and someone wearing a proton pack, and it's so great that that they remembered and that you were able to have that kind of full circle moment there. And
you know, and it's cool, like, because like you said, it does feel routine for us, because we're out there week in and week out, and you know, we're doing so many events each year, that it kind of does become that routine for us within the suits. But the reality of the situation is, you know, yeah, there's other Ghostbusters out there in the Chicago area doing their work. We're the largest team out there. So statistically speaking, you know, if they're not here and remembering us, they're remembering South Shore, you know, mm-hmm. Who's doing stuff in Northwest Indiana, you know. So odds are, we're the ones impacting these people, and if they're going to see a Ghostbuster, it's odds are it's going to be one of us.
Yeah.
And they don't forget that thing.
Yeah. And it's so cool. And it's, you know, I haven't been doing this very long. I'll be doing my wrapping up year two shortly here. And it still feels special to put on a proton pack. It still feels special to put on the jumpsuit, and it's nice that other people are feeling special there. So that's really cool. And also, you know, you talked about $11,000 going to La Bebida, and it's important, I think, for anyone, you know, listening or watching, these are $5, $10 donations coming in. You know, these are, people are giving small amounts, and that's so many people that have been excited or touched to see us at an event and choosing to reach into their pockets and help out. That it just speaks, you know, volumes to how great it is that our team has grown to a point that we can do the number of events that we have, but also that we're getting in front of so many people that are are giving, you know, these just small little donations, and it really tallies up by the end. It's so great, and it's, you know, so many times, you know, James and Steve, you've seen it too. It's somebody just kind of does a whole, I didn't even know you guys existed. This is so cool, and just they can't wipe the smile off their face and reach into their pockets just to give that donation without even a, you know, a pitch or anything. It's just because, you know, we made them smile. We remind them of something that, that they enjoyed in their life. And I'm rambling here. I got a sudden swell of pride for what we all volunteer to do.
It's a real thing though. You know, I'm the most tenured member on this team, which is insane to say, but I mean, there's members on this team that have been doing it as long, if not longer than me. You know, we've got members like MJ who've been doing it a long time with me, back in the Chicago Division days, you know, it's never changed. Just how happy people get when they see a Ghostbuster, when they see an Ectomobile, when they see, you know, our Stay Puffed Out, you know, it's always the same reaction of, oh my gosh, I remember this as a kid and this is the coolest thing. And the smiles that it brings. And I think it's, you know, I think it's very unique. There's not a lot of other costuming or pop culture items that can really do that, for people. Just you're walking down the street and, you know, you're like, oh my god, that's a Ghostbuster, that's insane, you know. it's a very special thing that we all get to be a part of. And I, you know, even after doing it, I'm going, this is 18 years now I've been doing Ghostbuster costuming. Even after all this time, it still warms my heart when I see somebody come up and with a big smile and be like, oh my god, Ghostbusters, this is amazing. I'm just grateful to be one part of the machine, one cog in the wheel, you know. I'm grateful for the fact of what my one cog gets to do in the grand scheme of things for the team.
Yeah. And you brought up a good point too. I really try. I mean, there are other cosplay groups that are huge contributors to causes, like, you know, like Larabita, like Lurie's. But we're, as Ghostbusters, we're not pretending to be a specific thing. We're not pretending to be a Mario or a Luigi or, you know, something like that. It's kind of, you, it almost is, doesn't feel as much like we're in a pretend world to buy into the Ghostbusters shtick. Does that make sense?
No, it's true. I did a lot of 501st costuming before I really tightened up and focused all my attention to Windy City Ghostbusters and Chicago Division earlier. You know, there's a big difference of me showing up to an event as Steve Sandrowski, the Ghostbuster, as opposed to me showing up as Darth Vader. Because you get the reactions. And this is not a knock at anything that the 501st or any of the other costumes.
Oh no, it's just a different vibe that you put out.
Right. It's just things. It's a very different feeling of like, okay, they wanna meet Darth Vader, and that's cool and that's awesome, and there's no, it's a really weird feeling to be there as Darth Vader doing cool Darth Vader things. But when you're out there as a Ghostbuster, you're out there as yourself.
Right.
Right. So I'm out there as Steve, and it's almost, even if you have a little bit of like anxiety or whatever, it's, you could turn that up just a little bit. You can turn, it's almost like wrestling for me, where you could, once you put that suit on, you just turn that knob up just a touch, and you're able to really do some really fun things, but as yourself, as opposed to, okay, now I got to be a stormtrooper.
Sure. Yeah. And I think the 501st is a good example there. You're inhabiting a role and a different person and mindset, when you're in that uniform. With being a Ghostbuster, it is. Yeah. It's Steve. It's James. It's Patrick. We are us. We're just on duty as Ghostbusters right now.
Yeah. But like the cool thing about it is, you know, to bring it back to the toy drive, I'm going into, as charity liaison, I had a team of members that went out to different stores to put in donation boxes in their locations for us to actually collect the toys. I'm going in as myself, and I'm going into these stores, and I'm like, hi, my name's Steve Zandrowski. I'm the charity liaison for Windy City Ghostbusters. This is what we do. We're a 501c3. This is what we did last year. We'd love for you to be a part of this. And it's almost the easiest pitch in the world because, again, everybody still loves Ghostbusters. Mm-hmm. So everyone's like, Ghostbusters, absolutely. And then when they see exactly what we've done in the past, they want to be a part of that as well. And there were some places that I went into this year, first time ever locations. I off the top of my head, I remember a place called Blurred's Underground in LaGrange. It's a comic book shop right in, on LaGrange Road, middle of downtown LaGrange. Went in, started my pitch, and the guy was like, I've seen you guys at the conventions. What do you guys want? We're in.
Awesome.
So it's the little things that, like, over time we don't really think about, especially at like a con. We're there, we're having a good time, we're still doing a lot of good for the hospitals and for the charities, but it's sometimes we almost have a disconnect of, yeah, I'm doing this, but like, you're not necessarily remembering, that other people are looking at what we're doing as well still, and that it's still making that impact even though we're having insane amounts of fun as we're doing it.
Yeah, and I'm a very introverted person, which is why I'm hosting a podcast. And I never am the person that has the guts, if I saw you guys at a con before I joined, to actually walk up and engage with you guys. I would awkwardly stand from afar and kind of watch what you were doing and wish I had a proton pack myself. But I think it's easy to forget just that brand awareness that's just being created all the time, and we're not even, we don't even have to interact directly with someone to leave a lasting impression. So, and did you, Steve, did you get to, or did I cut you off before you announced kind of where the final tallies were for the toy drive?
I was going and dropping a lot of numbers. So the grand total for what we did toy drive wise, was 2,877 toys. It's for comparison, last year it was only 1,300. We more than doubled what we did.
Only 1,300.
Which, look, 1,300 is an amazing number, and I can tell you, last year I was personally blown away that we got 1,300. This year, we went in with my the team that I formed for the toy drive, and we were like, okay, we did 1,300 last year. This year, let's shoot for 1,500. By the time we had gotten past the Rocket Pro event, we were coming up to that number, and by the time we had gotten to Ollie's, when we did our big, we do a big, for those that don't know, we do a big shopping spree. We've done it. This is our second year we've done it. We go to Ollie's in Aurora, and we take a chunk of the money that we've raised this year, and we spend it on toys for the kids. So that, checks are great. Kids can't hug a check,
right?
But we can buy them a stuffed animal or some toys or some things off the list and supplement everything that we're doing already. By the time we had gone into the Ollie's event, we were over 2,000 toys.
That's crazy.
And that was with after the Ollie's event, we were at, I want to say we were at like 2,500, and that was without there were many boxes outstanding on that still. So we were.
And
all
how did you transport all these? And what does the hospital do once you dump 2,300 toys on there?
Yeah. So okay. So this is like the crazy logistics thing of all of it, which a lot of people don't realize. So I collect all the toys and all the boxes, and they come back to my house, where they then occupy the spare bedroom in my house for about a month, where I then sort and organize the toys by theme, by age, books, games, all those things all get sorted out. So then I'm able to essentially rebag everything.
Steve, year, now when you leave for work and you get on an airplane, are you having nightmares that those toys are not going to be there when you get back?
There is concern of it. But you know, luckily it hasn't been a problem.
Sure. I would wake up in a panic.
Yeah, I get a little worried. I mean, I've got cameras at the house and stuff too. But it's definitely one of those things where it becomes almost overwhelming at times.
Yeah.
As you walk in and then there's just mountains of toys and it's like, okay, well now I've got to bag these, and then the bags start filling up the house, and then those get put into like my office area and all that. This year we actually needed a 10-foot U-Haul in order to store most everything.
Wow.
In addition to that, we filled up the Ecto from down in Peoria, as well as one of our northern Ectos. And we essentially had three full vehicles of bagged toys rolling up to the hospital. I gave the hospital a bit of a heads up the day before. I was like, just so you know, like I was giving them heads up with numbers and all that, and be like, just this is what we're looking at. Day before, I told them, I was like, okay, we're gonna have three cars full, two cars and a truck. So I just want you to be prepared and have your staff prepared for it. And we roll up, and you know, everyone's kind of waiting outside, and it's a spectacle, because right, you've got two Ectomobiles. This year we had two Ectomobiles and we had a full box truck.
Yeah.
And we just pull up front and we get out, and here we are with a giant check too. And we, you know, we take some photos, and then we drop all the toys off, and they have a lot of volunteers throughout the holiday season that are going through all the bags individually, and are like, okay, we need more toys for teens, we need more school age toys, we need more of this. And then they'll go in and they'll find it, and then they'll load them up, and then they'll wrap those toys themselves to hand out. When we pulled up, they immediately were like, okay, we need toys for teens, we need school age toys, and we need books. And I was like, cool, we've got everything organized. And they were just pulling bags off the truck and just bring them inside, because the hospital needed it. The hospital does well with the toy drive, but we are one of their largest donors when it comes to doing the actual drive. So
fantastic.
You know, and it's not just at Christmas time that these get handed out. These get handed out throughout the year. So a good chunk of them will get handed out at Christmas time, to make sure that their patients and their patients' families all have good Christmases, because a lot of them can't afford it. But they'll keep some in storage, or in their not in storage, but they'll keep a supply of toys for kids throughout the year. So if they have a new patient that's going to be staying with them long term, they'll then go grab a bunch of toys for the patient from what's been collected, and fill their room up with toys so that that kid can then feel more at home and more relaxed as opposed to just being in a bare hospital room.
Right.
If a child has a rough therapy session, hey, you did really great today. You get to pick a toy from the toy room, and they get, and they get something. And it's, I've been there at times, and have gotten to see the children receive, leaving the outpatient facility with the toy. And it's such a heartwarming feeling to know that, it's a lot of work that we put in on the back end for the team, but to see that one, how just one small item can impact a child when they really need it.
Right.
That's what makes it all worth it.
Yeah. And I think, and you it's good to keep in mind, and you brought it up, just how this is not just a Christmas present, where these are needed all year. And it, as important as it is, I mean, I'm 42 years old right now. I have some of my strongest memories as a kid are the moments that I received a toy, and especially toys that weren't, I wasn't expecting to
Yeah.
get, or, and it's great to be able to contribute to those feelings. And also as a dad, those parents are just as scared as the kids, if not more at times, going into those situations. And it's got to be a nice thing for the parents too, to walk into a room and see that there is, it's not just a bare hospital room or environment, and it's a more
Exactly.
warm and inviting place. And it's great that we've been able to contribute to the level that we have. And I want to thank you and the whole team that was putting in the hours, and worrying about the logistics. It's easy enough for me to go and pick out some toys and drop them off, but I know you guys put in so much work, and I want to thank you on behalf of the rest of the team.
Thank you.
You guys make it look really, really easy, and I know that it's not, and I appreciate you sharing a little bit about what's all involved,
You know,
in it.
it's I appreciate it. It's, I've said it before. I've kind of become the face of this toy drive, whether I want to be or not. And I have so many good people that are working with me in order to make this function at the level that it does. And it because it can never be a one person operation. It never can be. It's physically impossible for that. But I just want to make sure that everyone know, whether they're members of the team that are listening and watching, or fans of the team, members of other teams, it's the little things that we do that can make the biggest difference to these kids when they're having the worst days of their life, and we can't ever lose sight of that. And I feel very lucky that I have the opportunity to do the things that I get to do. I feel lucky to have the life that I have. When I know that there are others that are less fortunate than I am. But if you're from another team that's watching this, that's listening to this, you guys can all do this too. It's not, it takes a little bit of work, it takes a little bit of effort, but this is something that any team can do, that any person can do. All you got to do is reach out to your local stores at Christmas time, and I can guarantee you a lot of those places are going to be willing to help, because there's a lot of good in this world, and it's easy to forget that sometimes. But people are always willing to help, and are always willing to do some good if they believe in it. And I'm grateful that we have a team that believes in truly doing good, and truly doing some amazing things like this.
Sure. And I think that I appreciate you kind of took my next question, you know, as far as if you could give a little bit of advice to, you know, other groups that are watching, and I appreciate you kind of, you know, covering that. And it's important to know too, often we hold ourselves back because we don't know how necessarily to go about doing something. And we forget that there's a real generosity with people. If you're upfront with, I'm not entirely sure if you're the right person I should talk to, or, you know, I'm entirely sure how this is, but my end goal is to do this. Mm-hmm. Can I talk to you? Do you know who, or can you help put me in touch with someone? And people will respond. Not everybody, but if this is something you want to do as a group, don't be afraid to, you know, wear some of your, you know, uncertainty on your sleeve and let people know, you know, this is the end game, but, you know, help me, help put me on the right path for this.
You know, we're talking about these crazy numbers. Like, we've been doing this for a long time. This is only our third year doing the toy drive. You know, that's the honest reality of this. So, you know, I very distinctly remember the first year of trying to put this together. And it all kind of came from a member who had just been like, hey, I want to do a coat drive. Is there a way we could do a coat drive or something? And literally when I was president was asking me this, and asked me this year after year. And I was like, I don't know how to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe we could do like a toy drive, because at this point now we were now a little bit more partnered with the hospital. And I asked the hospital, I was like, hey, what do you guys do? He's like, well, we've got a toy drive. And I was like, perfect. Let me see what I can do. I can't promise anything, but let me see what I can do. And I remember I went to Jim, and I asked Jim, I was like, hey, can you come up with just a little one sheet for me that just talks about what the team is, what, you know, what the team has done. So this looks as legitimate as it is. And he came up with this little one sheet. And I remember for about a week straight, I was in my car just driving around store to store.
Mm-hmm.
It was stressful. It was tiring. And there were a lot of no's. Like, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. There were a lot of no's. But there were still a lot of yeses. Mm-hmm. And the yeses that we got have stayed with us for 3 years. And they believe in it. And for example, the one comic book shop, the AF Comics, Amazing Fantasy Comics in Frankfurt.
Mm-hmm.
I went to them and talked with the manager, and she was like, you know, I've always wanted to do something like this. I just never knew how. Yeah, we'd love to help.
Great.
And that's a lot of places had that same response of, yeah, we'd love to do it. You know, we just never really knew how, but if you're running it and you're willing to do it, yeah, you bring us the box and we'll put the box in here. And, you know, that first year, we did 900 toys, which for a first
that's a great number.
That's an amazing number, you know, especially for a first year. To do almost 1,000 toys, that you can't beat that. So,
how many locations just that first year do you recall us getting to?
One, two. We were in about seven. I think we were in seven locations, and then we had the Rocket Pro donation location as well that year.
Mm-hmm.
So I think eight total. And not all of them produced a lot of toys, but it's victory by 1,000 cuts.
Yeah.
And that's what it was, is we, okay, this store only really has, you know, 70 toys or whatever. That's fine. That's 70 more toys than we had to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next store would have, you know, okay, this one has 120. Cool. And now we're at almost 200 toys. And so it's just a slow build. And that hasn't changed even this year. You know, we were looking at boxes and it's like, okay, well, there's not a lot here. There's not a lot there, but that's okay. Mm-hmm. Over time, if you stick with the process and you believe in it, it will all come together. And I truly believe that that's the reason for success on this is you just got to believe.
Yeah. And, you know, to any of the smaller franchises out there, you know, each one toy is a moment that you're giving a child that really could use a good moment. So if you're only collecting 30, 40 toys over the course of a season, those are 30 or 40 moments that would not be there without you.
30 or 40 kids there that you have directly impacted.
So yeah, don't, you know, 2000, what was the final total from us?
2,877.
2,800 toys is fantastic. It's something to strive for. Don't let that intimidate you as far as what you're looking to do. And also, you know, Steve, part of what we are trying to promote here is the greater community of Ghostbusters as well. And I know that, you know, if anyone reaches out to our team and asks for advice or asks for help, you know, we're happy to respond.
I'm more than happy to help anyone that and give advice to anyone that wants to start their own drive. Again, I'm still learning. There's definitely a learning curve to this.
Mm-hmm.
But it's going to be stressful. But I can't deny that. But at the end of the day, when you hand over, even if it's, you know, hey, we only got a dozen toys, when you hand that over, you know that there are now a dozen more kids that are going to have a Christmas or are going to be able to have something to put a smile on their face that didn't before.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I said it earlier and it's one of my, it's kind of become a just my mantra is just a kid can't hug a check. And checks are, I love checks and I think it's great, but you know, that you can never guarantee where any of the check goes. You just can't. Mm-hmm. Once you hand it over, it is what it is. But if you're like, here's a teddy bear, here's some Hot Wheels cars, here's a puzzle, you can guarantee that that's going to a child.
Mm-hmm.
And in turn, you can guarantee that some kid is going to be able to hold that and love that toy and enjoy that toy in a way that, you know, a monetary donation can't necessarily do.
Yeah.
That's... And I know you're looking at time. I'm good to run for a little bit long.
I know you've got a hard stop, but
yeah, I can go about 30 more. I'm good.
Sure. Okay. And we do try and keep things, you know, close to that hour mark to stay consistent there. So Steve, what you're doing is you're forcing me to demand you come back on the show at some point so I can get to the 20 questions that I didn't get to ask you today. Cause I personally came in after you finished your term as president. And so I don't know much about your story and kind of areas that you were, you know, able to help the team grow. And I want to ask those. So I know we are at time, but Steve, if you would be so kind, I want to work with you to come back, you know, in a few months to share a little bit more of your story there. And absolutely. I didn't even get into any of the wrestling stuff.
No, it's all good. You know, I had
my belts and everything here all set to
you know,
show
I when it comes to talking about the charity aspect of the team and the amazing things that I get to be a part of when it comes to, you know, like the toy drive and the liaison work and all that, you know, I can just go on forever about that. Because, you know, doing this for 18 years, in the hobby, and there's been nothing more rewarding than the past year and a half that I've been doing this charity liaison position. So,
That's great.
I'd be happy to come back on anytime you want. I appreciate you having me on to
Sure.
kind of blabber on about all
No,
the
you know what?
about numbers and logistics and
I loved every minute of it. I loved hearing about it, and I think it's, I'm proud to be a part of this team, and I'm proud to be a contributor to what's happening, and I'm so thankful that we've got you helping steer the ship on this side of things. So thank you so much for the time that you give it. I know you are a busy man outside of the Ghostbusters world, so it means a lot that you keep that on your plate as well. So thank you, Steve, for a great year. We are going to talk again, and I am excited to talk to you next January and hear where everything ended up
New
for
goal the
2025.
new goal is 3. Everyone on my team has agreed that 3,000 is the new goal. So that's it's lofty, but that's what we're shooting for.
Yeah, that's what that's I think we can do it. 2,800, that's not that much more to knock out there. So
Exactly.
well, congratulations. You did a great job, and to all the franchises that were running toy drives, I hope that you all also saw great success and know that all the effort is worthwhile. And yeah, to all the other franchise too, hope you had a great year. Thank you all for the time that you've donated to give back,
Could I
and
say one last thing really quick?
unfortunately, Steve, I've got to cut you off there, but no, go ahead, Steve.
Okay. No, I just want to thank all the members of our team, who, on a weekly basis do such great work. They're really the heart and soul of everything that we do. And the only reason that things like this get accomplished. Because without the general membership, without the Ghostbusters that are just out there at every event, whether it's 2 events a year or whether it's 30, they're the reason that we're able to accomplish these things. So on behalf of myself, and I feel like I could say this for everyone in leadership as well. We thank you for everything that you've done to allow us to get to this point.
Great. That's, it's a privilege to be a part of this team. Yeah, it just, man, I'm so proud. I'm so proud. And it means a lot. So I want to thank you, Steve. Thank you to the entire team. Thank you to all the Ghostbusters listening or watching. You're making a difference. And it's a unique thing to do in this world, and I think a time when it's needed more than ever. So thank you so much to everyone that spent time in 2024, throwing on a flight suit, getting out there and representing Ghostbusters so well. So thank you to everyone. Thank you to Steve, and thank you to James Norman for producing the show today. Our director Bob, thank you for all your help. And is Bob broadcasting tonight? James, do we know? Are we throwing to Bob after our broadcast?
Yeah, we're gonna switch to Bob. We're gonna
Okay.
up for Twitch.
Perfect. So stay tuned, everyone on Twitch for Bob. Everyone else, have a wonderful rest of your week, and we will talk to you next week. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Why We Bust. See you guys next time when we look at another Ghostbuster and find out what makes them tick.
Memoriam Development.
Ooh.